Part 2. The Laidlaws were waiting for me in the drawing room. I noticed something new and strange in Sybil's demeanour. She looked at her husband with a motherly, protective air, while Laidlaw, who had been the extreme of masculine independence, seemed to cling to his wife with a curious, appealing fidelity. In conversation, he did little more than echo her words. Till dinner was announced, he spoke of the weather, the shooting, and Mabel Clanroyden. Then he did a queer thing, for when I was about to offer my arm to Sybil, he forestalled me, and clutching her right arm with his left hand, led the way to the dining room, leaving me to follow in some bewilderment. I've rarely taken part in a more dismal meal. The House of Moor has a pretty Georgian panelling through most of the rooms, but in the dining room the walls are level and painted a dull stone colour. Abraham offered up Isaac in a ghastly picture in front of me. Some photographs of the Quorn hung over the mantelpiece, and five or six drab ancestors filled up the remaining space. But one thing was new and startling. A great marble bust, a genuine antique, frowned on me from a pedestal. The head was in the late Roman style, clearly of some emperor. And in its commonplace environment, the great brows, the massive neck, and the mysterious, solemn lips had a surprising effect. I nodded towards the thing and asked what it represented. Laidlaw grunted something which I took for Justinian, but he never raised his eyes from his plate. By accident I caught Sybil's glance. She looked towards the bust and laid a finger on her lips. The meal grew more doleful as it advanced. Sybil scarcely touched a dish, but her husband ate ravenously of everything. He was a strong, thick-set man, with a square, kindly face, burned brown by the sun. Now he seemed to have suddenly coarsened. He gobbled with undignified haste, and his eye was extraordinarily vacant. A question made him start, and he would turn on me a face so strange and inert that I repented the interruption. I asked him about the autumn sport, and he collected his wits with difficulty. He thought it had been good on the whole, but he had shot badly. He had not been quite so fit as usual. No, he had had nobody staying with him. Sybil had wanted to be alone. He was afraid that the moor might have been undershot, but he would make a big day with keepers and farmers before the winter. Bob has done pretty well, Sybil said. He hasn't been out very often, for the weather has been very bad here. You have no idea, Henry, how horrible this moorland place of ours can be when it dries. It is one great sponge sometimes, with ugly red burns and mud to the ankles. I don't think it's healthy, said I. Laidlaw lifted his face. Nor do I. I think it's intolerable. But I'm so busy I can't get away. Once again, I caught Sybil's warning eye as I was about to question him on his business. Clearly, the man's brain had received a shock, and he was beginning to suffer from hallucinations. This could be the only explanation, for he had always led a temperate life. The distraught, wandering manner was the only sign of his malady, for otherwise he seemed normal and mediocre as ever. My heart grieved for Sybil, alone with him in this wilderness. Then he broke the silence. He lifted his head and looked nervously around till his eye fell on the Roman bust. "Do you know that this countryside is the old Manon?" he said. It was an odd turn to the conversation, but I was glad of a sign of intelligence. I added that I had heard so. "It's a queer name," he said, oracularly, "but the thing it stood for was queerer. Manon, Manor," he repeated, rolling the words on his tongue. As he spoke, he glanced sharply, and as it seemed to me, fearfully at his left side. The movement of his body made his napkin slip from his left knee and fall on the floor. It leaned against his leg, and he started from its touch as if he had been stung by a snake. I have never seen a more sheer and transparent terror on a man's face. He got to his feet, his strong frame shaking like a rush. Sybil ran round to his side, picked up the napkin and flung it on a sideboard. Then she stroked his hair, as one would